floods, droughts, locusts, climate change. There is a lot going on in and around us in Africa, and super fast. We are all seeing and feeling the effect it has on how we eat, move around, and even how we can make a living. For this reason, join me, Sophie Mbogwa, a Kenyan environmental journalist, for our weekly podcast, The Africa Climate Conversations. Africa Climate Conversations aims at helping you understand what climate change is all about, how it affects you and your family, what is being done in Africa, and what you can do to adapt and mitigate to its impacts, no matter where you are in Africa. Hello. Welcome to this week's edition of the Africa Climate Conversations. This is a weekly podcast dedicated to discussing climate change issues in Africa. I'm your host, Sophie Mbogwa. For the last 2 weeks, we defined weather, climate change, and global warming. We also discussed effects climate change has and what we can do about it in different sectors. In case you missed it, you can check those episodes on all podcast platforms or on my website, sophiembogwa.com. This week, we start a new series on the twin challenge of COVID-19 and climate change in Africa. I'm so humbled today to be joined from the Seychelles by Mr. Jean-Paul Adam, the Director for Technology, Climate Change and Natural Resources Management at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. Thank you so much for finding time this early morning.
The pleasure. Thank you very much. I think it's a great initiative to have the podcast. And effectively, I think we globally, unfortunately, we treat climate change as business as usual. And COVID has been the disruption. So we treat COVID as the emergency. But the climate emergency is as pressing. Yeah. And in some cases, arguably even more pressing.
Yeah.
My own background, I only recently joined the UNECA. So I started work with the UN in February this year, 2020. Just before COVID.
Yeah.
Before that, my career was in government. I worked with the government of the Republic of Seychelles.
Okay.
So not far from Kenya, 2.5 hours on Kenya Airways, if ever you have the chance.
Yeah.
Where once flights start again, for the moment, they are not there.
Yeah.
I worked as a minister. My last portfolio was in the cabinet. My last portfolio was Minister of Health. Mm-hmm. But before that, I was the Minister for Finance, and that went with the blue economy and the portfolio for the blue economy, which was basically how we can maximize the economic opportunity from the ocean while also addressing climate adaptation issues. And we did a few financing innovations at that time, including a debt for adaptation swap and a blue bond.
Okay.
And before that, I was also Minister of Foreign Affairs. So that's a little bit my background and my training. I was a career diplomat before entering politics.
Perfect.
And so now I'm back in the realm of the UN.
Ah, perfect. So at ECA, what are you doing currently?
So my current role is I run the division for technology, climate change, and natural resource management. So the main role of the division is essentially to prioritize the transition towards a green economy or a blue economy, meaning an economy which is focused around sustainable practices and which looks at maximizing wealth creation and equality, but using responsible modes of production and consumption. So it's really about recognizing what are the limits that we have in relation to natural resources, but recognizing that we do need to have an approach that improves people's livelihoods. You know, it's a false narrative to say that we protect something without creating incomes. We have to create incomes. We have to create opportunities. We have to be able to improve people's livelihoods. So that's a little bit the focus of the work of the division. And obviously that includes addressing climate change, because climate change is actually, even today, is costing people money. It's costing jobs. The work that our division has done and the UNECA more widely has shown that just today, in current terms, climate change is costing African economies on average 2-3% of their GDP.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, if you look at that in the context of COVID is costing between 1.7 and 2.7 5% of GDP on average immediately. Of course, there are some outliers, as there are with climate change. In climate change, you also have some economies that are affected up to 10% of GDP even today. And in the future, there are some scenarios that lead to losses of up to 15% of GDP. Mm-hmm. So the impact of climate change is immediate. It's affecting the daily lives of people in Africa. Mm-hmm. And it's affecting the ability of African governments to deliver in terms of improved livelihoods for their citizens.
Yeah. And that means as much as COVID-19 is happening, we need to think about climate change as an urgent issue that needs addressing.
I think it's interesting to actually think about COVID as part of the sustainable development and climate change response, because we can expect that as climate change continues to progress, we will see the continued rise of zoonotic-based diseases, which all evidence points that COVID started as a zoonotic disease. Mm-hmm. And we can expect, therefore, there'll be increased frequency of similar related pandemics. And climate change will probably increase that frequency. Climate change is already costing people's lives. The WHO estimates that on an annual basis, 150,000 people are losing their lives. And this will rise to 250,000 by 2030, less than 10 years. Mm-hmm. So climate change is already an urgent issue. The response to climate change and the response to COVID should be part of the same package. And that's about building back better, focusing on a green recovery. And that means investing in platforms that help sustainable development to be mainstreamed, looking particularly at issues such as energy, such as food production and distribution, such as water and sanitation. These are the issues on which you, when you build them correctly, you build resilience within communities. And you can respond to both COVID and also to climate change. And we feel that response should be coordinated and should be part of the same response towards achieving sustainable development.
And when we look at this year, last year, we're looking at different regions affected differently. And when you look at the Horn of Africa, it has been experiencing a triple challenge currently right now, because we had first the invasion of locusts that are supposed to be on the second phase right now. And then we look at the issues of COVID-19, and then we look at the issues of climate change. I would just probably want us to just have an overview of how climate change, COVID-19, and other challenges of including locusts that are affecting different regions. Because earlier this year, UNECA had, that is United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, in April, they released a report that was on COVID-19 in Africa. And I just want to have an overview from someone who's actually listening to us right now. You mentioned the relationship between COVID-19 and climate change in terms of zoonotic, and then climate change is likely to increase the likelihood of these particular infections in future. But I would want us to also look into how different regions have been affected currently, where as we speak right now.
Absolutely. And the situation that we are seeing in Eastern Africa in relation to the triple threat that you have mentioned, which becomes a quadruple threat when you look at the imminence of a global recession, which will also be affecting Africa disproportionately because of the lack of fiscal space relatively in African countries compared to, for example, more developed economies. Mm-hmm. So the issue of the locusts has a direct link with the climate change, as we have seen. The heavy rains in some areas have led to particularly fruitful breeding season, and which has now been translated into this heavy population of locusts that travel across several areas, including outside of Africa, but which the impact on particularly the food supplies in Eastern Africa is the most dramatically felt. This is part of a wider trend that we are seeing in terms of the impact of climate change on issues which are directly affecting people's lives, whether it be in terms of food security. But we've also seen last year, we've seen the impact of various cyclones that have, we've had the Kenneth, Cyclone Kenneth and Idai, which have had numerous impacts in terms of displacing people, in terms of the loss of life, the loss of investment, the loss of property, and which have also led to increased health challenges such as cholera outbreaks, and which have put pressure on already weak health systems. Yeah. So the whole narrative around climate change is that we will see a continued increase in these what we would call shocks of different kinds, and COVID-19 is part of that as well. And the challenge that we all have is to build the resilience for the next shocks. It's not that it's not a question of if it's coming; it's a question of when. Mm-hmm. And the different scenarios show that we need to build that resilience in Africa to be able to better respond to these issues.
Mm. And before we go on, how do we build this resilience? We talked about East Africa. How are other regions faring?
Well, there are similar challenges being faced in the other regions. If we look at the Sahel, there have been issues around availability of water, which has directly impacted as well on the availability of food, and which consequently has also impacted in terms of the security situation in the country. We have seen rise of militantism and of extremists, because peace and security is always directly linked to the availability of food and the availability of services, which can allow people to have normal lives. Where these normal lives are disrupted, it's a fertile ground for extremism. We're also seeing in numerous other countries disruption of weather patterns, which impact on their crops, on their livelihoods, and also their ability to invest. If we look also at Southern Africa, and if we take the situation of Zimbabwe and countries around Zimbabwe, Botswana, Zambia, they are all dependent on a very significant portion of their electricity comes from hydropower from the Kariba Dam. Mm-hmm. And the disruption in weather patterns, which also are linked to the cyclones, have had an impact. For example, that the dam is operating at a very much reduced capacity, and this has meant that the availability of electricity, for example, has not been guaranteed in these areas, which has consequently had a direct impact on the economy. So if we take Zimbabwe in 2018 was growing at about 7 or 8%. Mm-hmm. And in 2019, and particularly the beginning of 20, was in negative growth. And that's directly linked to, and this will be exacerbated by COVID-19, yep. But the beginning of the negative growth was directly linked to the availability of power, which is a critical element for the economy. And that was linked to the lack of rains and the lack of hydropower.
Mm-hmm. What about in Central Africa?
Obviously, in Central Africa, they've had less issues of drought, but they have had issues of heavy rains. There is the issue as well of vector-borne diseases linked to the changes in rain patterns. That includes malaria, dengue fever, and other diseases, also including waterborne diseases. Mm-hmm. So. Every region in Africa is affected directly by climate change and immediately. It's not something that's happening tomorrow. It's something that's happening immediately. We can perhaps look for some other examples which are a little bit more specific. Mm-hmm. But those are a few that I'm aware of off the top of my head.
Absolutely. When we look at the issues of climate change, this year, 2020, has been is one of the most important years in terms of adapting, meeting the climate goals. Like you remember when in 2015, when nations came together and agreed limit the world leaders committed under the Paris Agreement to keep the global temperatures under 2 degrees and further committed to endeavor to keep it within safer threshold of 1.5. So this year, nations were required to revise and submit their climate commitment, that is the nationally determined contributions, given that the previous commitments nations had submitted was leading us to a 3 degrees warmer world. So I'm wondering, with COVID-19 happening this year now, and nations now looking into issues of how do we prevent our people and how do we shield our people, how does this year look like in terms of now climate ambitions and commitment?
It's a critical moment because we are off track in relation to the commitments made in the Paris. And this was to be a year where we ramp up ambition. Mm-hmm. I think we can be proud that actually African leaders and African governments have been pushing very much the narrative of increasing ambition. Mm-hmm. And Africa has therefore been taking a lead role. But this is in against the backdrop where there has definitely, among many of the biggest economies that produce the most emissions, there has been a degree of backsliding, or at the very best, you could say that there is a reduced focus on implementing increased ambition around the Paris Agreement. Mm. So, but it's important for us to look at COVID-19 as actually the moment where increasing the ambition and actually ensuring that there is counter-cyclical investment in, for example, energy, which should be primarily renewable energy. And the economics now show that renewable energy is actually much more cost-effective. If we take even among developed economies, a number of coal plants are actually closing for no other reason than they are not economical. So it is perhaps the perfect moment to actually increase investments in renewables and therefore bring us to a path of well below 2 degrees, 1.5 degrees in terms of increase in temperature on pre-industrial averages. And the advantage of this counter-cyclical investment in renewables is that it will be part of kickstarting job growth and job creation and wealth creation. And particularly in the African continent, there are 600 million Africans that still don't have access to electricity. Sure. And if we can connect those 600 million Africans, it will create opportunities for SMEs. It will create opportunity for sustainable agriculture and better food distribution systems. It will create jobs for women who are currently not involved, for example, in the job sector, in the employment arena. And it will therefore improve overall wealth creation and equality. So I think that there's an opportunity by, and energy is a platform for building investments also in many other areas. If you can, as I've said, if you can connect all of these people in Africa who are currently unconnected, this will open a new market as well, where we can mobilize the African continental free trade area and create opportunities for trade, opportunities for exchanges and better job creation. So I think it's imperative this year that we raise the ambition, and in all countries, it should be part of the recovery.
Okay. Therefore, that means as nations now think about economic recovery, these climate plans, this climate and recovery should be one and the same thing.
Absolutely. I think they are indivisible. The need to have a green recovery is about ensuring that you are creating sustainable jobs also. For example, there is no point in commissioning a new coal plant at this point when you know that coal is uneconomical. And anybody who's monitoring energy markets will tell you that that certain types of energy are not going to be viable in the long term, and you will be creating an investment which will be a false investment in the future and jobs that will be lost within a few years. Mm-hmm. Whereas investing in renewables will provide long-term jobs, and also by ensuring that there is connectivity more widely, it will create other opportunities throughout the economy. There is a need for some transition in Africa, where some fossil fuels may need to be used as a transition, whether it be gas or in some other countries, it may be some other fuels, but we should not forget that Africa is responsible for less than 4% of global emissions, despite having 17% of the world population. Sure. So overall in Africa, the priority must be to connect our citizens to electricity, use renewables because those are the best economic choices at the moment, and backing them up where necessary with a transition in terms of some other fossil fuels. But globally, we also need enhanced ambition by the biggest emitters. And I think Africa also has a role to play to pass that message very strongly.
Okay. Yeah, because then again means even if Africa, that is contributing less than 4%, did everything and went to renewable, and then the big economies...
Yeah, we'll still not be on a path of being well below 2 degrees, because Africa on its own can in a sense, make its own future more sustainable. And I think that's a message that every African leader needs to take on board, mm-hmm. that the investments that you make now in the response to COVID will set your economic path for a few years to come. And then if you are not investing in renewables now, then your economy will be on the wrong path and it'll be harder to change later on. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Africa needs to keep in mind. But in terms of making a real difference in terms of climate impact globally, we need the biggest emitters to take the lead, and they need to make very, very serious commitments to reduce greenhouse gas emissions globally.
Absolutely. And that has to come as nations recover from COVID-19.
Exactly. And the same messages apply in the sense that if we are really looking at sustainable job creation and wealth creation, mm-hmm. We have to be looking at industries of the future. And investing in renewables, for example, is part of that. And ensuring that we have more resilient food production and distribution systems is part of that. Ensuring that we have appropriate water and sanitation is part of that. And that applies to all countries, because even within the more parts of the more developed world, some of these challenges have been outlined by COVID-19. Even in the most developed countries, they had food distribution and production issues, and they are still facing those. So it's necessary that we look at mainstreaming sustainable systems now, because that will prepare us better for what will be inevitably happen again in some form. It may not be a pandemic in exactly the same form as we are seeing now, mm-hmm. but there will be other global events that will impact countries substantially. And unless we make these kind of changes now, we will not be prepared for them.
Absolutely. So this whole building better, this whole building resilience and also nations recovering requires financing, right?
Exactly.
And I was looking at the ECA report, there's the policy brief that was released in May on impacts on COVID-19 in Africa, and looking into Africa specifically, the debt increased from 39.5% in 2011, that is the average debt to GDP ratio, to 61.3% in 2019. So we're already seeing nations that have been spending 2 to 9% of their GDPs to adapt to climate change. That was already before COVID-19 happened. So nations need more money right now to now deal with the twin challenge that has also come. And in our conversation, we look into those two, should the recovery should be one and one, same thing. But I'm wondering how, in terms of when you look at climate issues and climate financing has been one big handle for developing countries to have that finance, how do we go about with high rising debt in Africa? How do we deal with this challenge that we have at the moment? How do we finance that?
Absolutely, because I think we have to firstly situate the situation that African countries were facing. The rising debt issues were starting even before COVID-19.
Yeah.
And this is a wider issue around how we address development financing. You see, the impact of climate change, for example, often goes below the radar. African countries are already suffering by 2 to 3% of their GDP annually, mm-hmm. Because of climate change. But this is simply factored into business as usual, and it should not, because this is an externality which is directly impacting on these economies, and which these countries have had very limited responsibility for the creation of the problem in the first place. Mm-hmm. Access to climate finance has also been very difficult. The Green Climate Fund has provided, I think, some very good projects, of which a number of African countries have benefited. Mm-hmm. But overall, the gap in terms of climate financing remains substantial. There's the UNEP Adaptation Finance Gap Report, which estimates that $140 to $300 billion in adaptation finances, mm-hmm. financing will be needed by 2030. Yeah. And that's 6 to 13 times greater than what international public finance has made available today. Mm-hmm. So you can see the scale of the gap, and those figures are not taking into account the impact that COVID-19 will have on public financing around the world. So it includes countries that had pledged money towards climate change adaptation and mitigation. Mm-hmm. They would perhaps be less able to put that money there. So there's a real challenge. And then we have the debt issues with African countries, because the reality that most African countries have been facing is we actually have seen certain successes. Africa was growing relatively well Still not fast enough, but it was growing overall. There was almost every African country had growth in their economies prior to COVID-19.
Yeah.
But they had very little fiscal space. And a lot of the countries, there are those, of course, that are considered least developed countries and had access to concessional financing through the World Bank and the IMF and so on. Mm. But many of the others had to borrow commercially, whether it be on bond markets or whether it be on commercial banks or through other forms of domestic financing. And this has driven debt up substantially. And because all of these countries have been seeking to improve their infrastructure, to address the investments around the sustainable development goals, but mm-hmm. also adapt to the immediate impact of climate change. Yep. So there's a direct correlation between climate change adaptation and the gradual rise in African debt. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the responses in the immediate, the ECA has been calling through the partnership of African governments has been calling for a moratorium.
Yeah.
This has been moratorium on debt. This has been granted for the least developed countries, but we are making a very strong case that this should cover all African countries without mm-hmm. exception, mm-hmm. because African economies are increasingly integrated.
Yeah.
You, by supporting one country, let's say a middle-income country or even an upper-middle-income country, mm-hmm. you can also support trade towards least developed countries that have borders with those countries. So it's important that we look at that in a very holistic manner.
Yeah.
The moratorium is obviously only an immediate solution, meaning that the money that's freed up will go into the immediate response of COVID-19. It's essentially going to health sectors. But we have to find ways that we can also generate additional funding towards the response to climate change. And we have to empower countries themselves and not only create a culture of dependence.
True.
And this is where ideas that the ECA have been floating is, for example, the creation of a special purpose vehicle mm-hmm. for African debt, mm-hmm. Which would reduce the cost of that debt, perhaps also extend it over a longer term, provide some guarantees using international institutions, and therefore reduce the overall of that cost of that debt, and therefore create more fiscal space for African economies. We're also looking at other innovations, for example, green or blue bonds. Mm-hmm. And in my past experience as a Seychelles Minister of Finance, Seychelles is a country that has done a blue bond in 2017, 2018. Mm. These are, in the context of Seychelles, it involved a guarantee, for example, from the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly there will be certain needs for some forms of credit enhancement by international institutions to allow some of this private sector money to go into African economies, which are often perceived as being more risky.
Mm-hmm.
But these kind of financing models can perhaps plug some of the gap that is existing in terms of investment needs, particularly in energy, where there is a return on investment. So it's not as if these African economies are expecting simply to have handouts.
Yeah.
These are things that can be built together in a holistic and sustainable manner. And we also believe very strongly that it's definitely time for some form of global trading system in terms of carbon, and one which also particularly looks at the needs of developing countries. So not simply putting a price on carbon, which is then traded among big firms, but a price on carbon which recognizes the fact that African economies contribute the least towards greenhouse gas emissions, and therefore giving them the space for them to have funds that they can invest in climate change adaptation, looking at nature-based solutions, for example, the rehabilitation of mangrove areas, of deforested areas, of creating buffer areas around cities, so that we don't face the pollution problems that number of emerging big cities have faced. And all of this requires upscaling and financing, and carbon-based trading programs are perhaps part of that solution, among others. But we also believe that ultimately, there just has to be more focus on actually delivering in terms of commitments that have been made in terms of climate change financing.
Well, sticking with that, in terms of carbon trade, we've seen much of the trade within that existed within many African countries is mainly where carbon is sold to other different parts of the world. But I'm thinking, what about trading within countries to countries within Africa, increasing that, where you have, for example, a carbon trade project in Seychelles, and you have probably a company like probably Kenya Airways buying that particular carbon from these communities?
I think this is something that definitely needs to be examined. And I think there's a great opportunity through the AFCFTA to look at regional mechanisms. But because overall Africa is not a net emitter in terms of carbon dioxide, it's important that whatever we do internally within the continent is also situated within a global system.
Okay.
Because overall, there will be opportunities for offsets between, for example, aviation companies are typically going to be those that will have to look for offsets in some form or another, and also for some of the fossil fuels companies in transition scenarios will be having to look for offsets in some form. So there will be opportunities for regional trading, but we also need to make sure that there is a global system that can support it.
That's fantastic. So one final thing before I let you go, private sector, what role can they play in terms of dealing with COVID-19 and climate change?
I think that it's important, firstly, to recognize that Africa is vulnerable, is very vulnerable to climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And African countries do not have the fiscal space that a lot of the developed world has. But Africa is no longer in the same situation where it's no longer in a situation where it simply needs handouts. In most scenarios, and even around the investments that need to be made in terms of sustainable development, there are opportunities for investments that bring return. Now, these private sector investors do need to avoid looking at Africa as simply a high risk and high return and looking at the long term. Investments that are made now can generate long-term sustainable returns based on the perspectives that these African economies have. COVID-19 is obviously having a big impact now, but the fundamentals of these economies were sound even before COVID-19 came in.
Sure.
So once the recovery kicks in, we can expect that there will be a positive return in terms of investments that are made, particularly in the energy sector.
Mm.
Of course, governments have a strong role that needs to be that needs to be strengthened also in some cases, looking at the regulations and ensuring that there is an overall transparency in terms of the investment framework.
Mm-hmm.
But we need the private sector to not just look at Africa as a cash cow where you can, because of the risk that is perceived, that you get a high return quickly, but look at Africa as a development opportunity in the longer term, where you can have sustained return on investment. And by investing, for example, in energy, the opportunities, the subsequent opportunities that will be created even in other sectors are substantial and will also create therefore other opportunities for the private sector to invest. But it has to be on the basis of partnership. And as I said, Africa is no longer in the situation where it just needs handouts.
Yeah.
It needs partnership and investment based on an understanding of a shared risk, but also a shared reward.
Thank you so much. That is fantastic that you actually wrap it up like that. Thank you so much. I sincerely appreciate you for finding time this morning.
A pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. And I'm hoping that in future, you have a very wide range of issues that we can actually discuss in terms of climate issues. And I'm hoping that I can call on you back again, sometimes back to probably discuss blue economy and oceans and climate change issues.
Please do, because I think these are nature-based solutions and sustainable development of, for example, ocean spaces, I think is going to be one of the key ways in which Africa can put in place sustainable strategies to achieve the development and the sustainable development goals. So
yeah.
It'd be a pleasure to speak to you about these issues.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I sincerely appreciate it. And do have yourself a lovely day and a lovely week ahead.
Same to you. Thank you so much.
All right.
Remember to subscribe and listen to this podcast, now available on all podcast platforms, and you can as well as access it on my website, sophiembogwa.com. Until next week, kwaheri, do have yourself a productive and a safe week ahead. Floods, droughts, locusts, climate change. There is a lot going on in and around us in Africa, and super fast. We are all seeing and feeling the effect it has on how we eat, move around, and even how we can make a living. For this reason, join me, Sophie Mbogwa, a Kenyan environmental journalist, for our weekly podcast, The Africa Climate Conversations. Africa Climate Conversations aims at helping you understand what climate change is all about, how it affects you and your family, what is being done in Africa, and what you can do to adapt and mitigate to its impacts, no matter where you are in Africa.